No,
I'm full grist already. Hi, my name is Gary, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gary.
I can sit down?
Sure.
Whatever
you want.
Tell me
to look
at you. Yeah. You're too kind. Like I said, my name is Gary, and I am an alcoholic. I definitely belong right here, in this group right here. I got to thank God Almighty. I am here with you folks right now. I had a great, great day, fantastic day. I had to spend it. I got to spend it with. I had to spend it with my mother, and I got to spend it with my little daughter. You know, hey, what can I say? Things don't. You know, I've changed. Things around me haven't changed. What can I say? There's still family members in my family. Big pains in the ass, kind of thing. You know. May 26, 1996 is whenever I last put my buddy Jack Daniels on the side and Budweiser and, you know, but I came into Montreal after the ice storm and in 97 and I met up with the chronic pothead and her and I, we lived together. We were stoned for 9 months of our lives. So what can I say? I restarted my program on January the 24th, 1999 and since then I've been clean and sober from both drugs and booze. But my preferred drug of choice is whiskey. I love whiskey. I touch vodka and I go Indian, so I stay away from that, you know? I got total control over my whiskey thing, you know? I am Indian. I'm Mi'kmaq Indian. I come from a reservation up in Agaspe, which is, I like to welcome our neighbors, too, from the United States of America. And I believe there's Iroquois Nation that you have in Michigan. And, north of Maine, that's where I come from. And it's a little Indian reservation called Listiguch. Listiguch means disobey your father. Pay attention to your mama because mama's going to slap you behind the head if you get out of hand kind of thing. We come from a background where the woman, she's the leader. Reason being is because the man had become, irresponsible due to alcohol. The reservation I come from at one particular time was 100% alcoholic. Including the priest, including the dentist, including the social workers, including the agent that used to come in. The agent used to come into the reservation and give a check to my grandma. I was raised by my grandma. I was not raised by my biological parents. And that's just it. The agent would come in with a check and give it to my grandma. And my grandma honestly thought that this check she was receiving was because she was from the First Nations community. And even to the day until she died, she honestly thought that she was receiving this money that nobody else received. It was called welfare, you know? So my background is basically that. I was brought up on welfare. The reservation, there was lots of hostilities. Lots of shootings. It used to hit the front page of the Allo Police and Photo Police on a regular basis. Due to everybody had a gun, so they get drunk up and bang, bang, bang. You know, the old resentments between families that would go on. So there was a lot of fear built up inside me. You know, right next door was the McCoys, and these McCoys right here. In fact, one of the boys is in this big book right there, and I sobered up with him. And one particular time, I had told them, I had told myself, I says, I want to be a fighter pilot. The first thing I want to do, there's a river right in my backyard, and right across in New Brunswick, there's a mill. I used to hate this mill. I'm still a tree lover by nature. I love trees. But one of the things I wanted to do was take a fighter jet and bomb that mill, do a 180, come back and blow up my neighbors. You know, there was lots of anger against these people right here. Because I often said, you know, why do they have to ruin the whole neighborhood kind of thing? And so, of course, like I said, I had a lot of fear inside me at an early age. We were transferred into New Brunswick for education purposes. I went to school in Campbellton, New Brunswick, and the reality is, it was the first time I could just see a porcelain toilet bowl. Television, came later, so on and so forth. You know, I didn't have the materialism that exists today with children. So I got to thank God Almighty I had this because now I have the greatest respect for nature, and I'm passing this down to my little girl too. Due to this program that I'm in right now, Alcoholics Anonymous, this is Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, right? Yeah. I have to admit it, due to this right here, I can pass down everything which is positive to a little girl. I have a little 5-year-old. And what can I say? The lady and I, we met in this program right here. We're both two recovering drunks. We got together, and we did everything backwards. And we had a baby, and then, hey, get to know each other kind of thing. And it didn't work. But we have joint custody. And the reason being is because I don't, she knows for a fact that I don't have to touch anything today. And, you know, I know for a fact that she's very responsible too, and she won't touch anything. And she's the best mother that there is existing for my daughter. And I'm the best father that I never had. Like I says, I didn't have my biological parents. My mother, she's there. Like I says, I was with her today. She's a biological, she gave me birth. And, but that's it. My mother was my grandmother, and she's gone. She's gone in powwow heaven somewhere right there, you know. But I know for a fact that she's with me right now, because spiritually, I honestly believe in the old traditional way that we become something else. I believe in reincarnation. We don't leave this world. We become spirits and enter another different form. This is my belief, and this is a belief that I come across whenever I was in the West Coast. You see, I left the reservation at the age of 12 years old. I had the tail end of residential school, and they put me into a foster home. Now, in the foster home, it was a messed up bunch altogether. I got to see people in there. I got to see one guy, their own son. He took a razor blade like that. He said, oh, I don't want to die. He comes into the living room. Yeah, I don't want to die. He's bleeding. So they take him away. And this is their own son, the foster parents. And they had 15 or 25 children that went through that foster home. And that last year, whenever I left back in 1979, they shut the place down because of perversion. After, you know, whenever I had gone back, I had met up with other foster kids, and these foster kids, they used to talk about the different nightmares. So, you know, due to myself, anyway, I was already a delinquent, and, you know, I could stand up for myself. There was only one attempt that was made on me by one of the pedophiles, their own son, you know. And it's a terrible place to go kind of thing, you know. But what can I say? I lived through it. I went through school. I every year, for some strange reason or another, I got thrown out due to my love. I found the miracles of marijuana at a very, very early age. And all through school, I got into trouble due to that. And that's just it. Lots of drinking. Smashed up a car at the age of 16 years old. I was a wild little character, and but, you know, I wanted to go to school. I did graduate at 16 years old. I graduated secondary 5 in Bonaventure Polyvalent. And then after that, the social services turned around and said, you have to now go and live with your biological mother, who was out west. And I got out west, and I lasted 3 months with her in Edmonton, Alberta. And I tried to go out on my own, and before you get to know it, I went to where there was other native people on Skid Row in the cities. For some strange reason or another, that's where they go. And for some strange reason or another, that's where I was attracted to. I had no confidence in myself at all whatsoever. I wanted to be anything but an Indian. I wanted to be a white man. I used to walk around with a tight ass like a white man, you know, and give it my best shot not to be an Indian kind of thing. But, you know, how can you fool somebody, you know? I had long, long hair at the time, and I look like an Indian, you know, easy as that. But within no time at all, I was the first time it was to get away from beating. What had happened was, I lived out there, I worked out there, made good money, but I drank it all and puffed everything away. And I come across also something that's called mescaline, put that into my nose, but I didn't like it. I didn't like cocaine, I didn't like all that stuff due to a fear that I had watching my grandma take all kinds of prescription pills, and that put a fear inside me. And the chemical stuff of cocaine and so on and so forth, no, it didn't turn me on. So out west it was basically booze, and before you get to know it, I was in a blackout. We lived in this abandoned apartment block, and there was a party happening between myself and some other people, and there was a speaker right over there, and I had gone to the speaker in a blackout and peed on the speaker. Now, you don't do that in the party kind of thing, you know? People don't like it, especially the man of the house. So he takes me right outside, and he's about to beat me up. He's a FBI. Do you know what FBI is? Fucking big Indian. This guy right here, he was about to beat me up, literally, and he was going to take me outside, and he says, you know, I remember that. He says, Gary, I like you. He says, I'm going to do something better for you. So he dragged me outside. Perpendicular to where we lived was ADAC, Alberta Alcoholic Drug Abuse Commission, Edmonton, Alberta. He threw me in there. I woke up there, and there was 22 questions. And sincerely speaking, blackouts, continuously, all the time, I'm a blackout drinker. So, you know, definitely, are you an alcoholic? I don't know. Let's find out if I'm an alcoholic or not. So I went through a 30-day program in there, and it was a counselor that I was very, very fond of, Steve Kelsey. And Steve, at one point, he was talking about going out with his girlfriend and having some wine. And I says, "You drank?" He says, "Alcohol is not my problem." Click. Oh, interesting. So, of course, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to stay away from booze, but I'm going to smoke my brains out. And that was the first time I made the contact with Alcoholics Anonymous, because during the program, we would go downstairs to the meeting, and I'd take a look around and check the people out, and Geritol crowd kind of thing, you know? And I said, no. Eventually, one of these fine days, and I used to meet up with other people and that used to go back and forth in the meetings, some other native people. One guy in particular, Joe, he used to carry around a big book. And him, too, he was staying away from alcohol but smoking. So I said, oh, it's cool. We're going to continue smoking. But once again, before you get to know it, I ended up, that was in Edmonton, Alberta. And we're talking about 1979, 80, 81, 82. And then all of a sudden I ended up in Gaspé to do my seiship in 83. And it was out there where I turned around and I didn't smoke, I didn't drink yet. And before you get to know it, there was no smoke. So there was a party happening and I said, fuck it, pass me a Budweiser. For that whole summer, for some strange reason or another, for that whole summer, I was drunk not every day. I am a binge drinker. Not every day, except whenever I got drunk. I got drunk and it lasted for days. But, you know, like I say, you know, like I could do without a drink for 5 days, I guess. And, you know, before you get to know it, I was in the same position one more time. It was no fun. It's no fun being out there drunk like that, knowing that, there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong. And, you know, because Alcoholics Anonymous has planted a seed inside of me. I know that for a fact. What can I say? You know, now I have to nurture it. And it's dealing with my alcoholism on a daily basis. But, like I said, Alcoholics Anonymous did not really take any effect into my life until in 88. What had happened was there was a time span I was working and I did good. And, you know, I had lots of ups and downs and problems and this and that. And what had happened was I was here in Montreal right here in 88. In 88. And I was on one of those drunks one more time. And I was on a drunk in Quebec City. And then it ended up in Montreal. From Montreal, I ended up getting on an aircraft. I was going to go and see a buddy of mine down in Florida. And in New York, we didn't have to change aircrafts. It was in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, where we had to change, we had to get a connection flight. And between aircraft A and aircraft B, I come across a bar. So much for aircraft B. Then I woke up and I took a look on the streets. I remember that one, I'll never forget it, Peachtree Avenue, Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm standing there in December in a parka, for God's sakes, and long underwear, and it's hot down there at that time, you know? So I spent the whole winter down in Atlanta, Georgia, worked down there, and then I came back into Montreal in Canada, and I wanted to get back on with Environment Canada. I used to work with National Parks, and I was going to get back on with them, and it was too late for me because in order for me to get back on with them, I got to make sure I'm back in Canada in January. So there was no way on earth they were going to take me back, and so that summer, it was spring and then summer, I was living on the streets in Montreal until I went to see a Mohawk. A Mohawk by the name, God bless his soul, is no longer with us. He's originally from Ganawagi, and he used to work over at the Native Friendship Center. His name is Gary DeLarone, really beautiful, nice man. And he says to me, you need help. I said, damn right, I need help. Man, oh man. He says, well, why don't you try Gunnasadagi, Oka Treatment Center? He says, yeah, I'll try that. So anyway, he shipped me over there, got over there, and I lasted 3 days. 3 days there. There was these two Mohawks, and these two were just basically just doing their work. They were wanting to know about me. And I had problems with letting you know about me. I had to run from you. I had fear of you. And so anyway, including these two guys right there, and it was honest truth. Like, these two guys put it right in front of me. This guy, he's always been bullshitting out on the street. Do you think he's going to turn around right now in such a short period and tell us the truth? And they were right. So anyway, I said, the hell with you guys. So, of course, the phony pride was coming out, and phony pride said, hey, let's get the hell out of here. Now, one of them, Brian, he's
he's an Ojibwe from Ontario. He was following me.
And of course, inside of me, I'm saying to myself, Brian, stop me. But the phony pride is saying, get out of here, get out there and go on and get drunk, you know. And I did. I got back out on the road and I hitchhiked right back into Montreal, got drunk. Next morning, I woke up with a hangover. I went to see Gary at the Native Friendship Center. He turns around and he asks me, he says, what happened? I says, couldn't handle it. He said, oh, that's all right. He says, how about Maui-Yomi Treatment Center? Maui-Yomi Treatment Center is a Mi'kmaq treatment center up in Gaspé. And he put me on a train. I got shipped up into Gaspé, and before you get to know it, on a train I went into the bar car, and this is my moment where I met up with an angel. There was one gentleman sitting in the bar car. I went in there, and I ordered a cup of coffee. Coffee? Bar car? What's wrong with this picture altogether? So anyway, there's one dude, and, you know, he's checking me out. I'm checking him out, and this is he probably has other ideas, you know. But before he gets to know, we start talking. And you know what? He turns around and says, what's happened? He started saying stuff like, first things first, one day at a time. I ask, are you drunk? He says, no, I'm not a drunk. He says, So he asks, what's your name? I said, Mud. Mud, wow, that's a beautiful name. What are you talking about? He says, because mud, you can take it, it's easy to work with. You can make something beautiful out of it. If you would have said stone or rock, you would have had problems. You're going to go for it, he says. I'll never forget that moment. I'll never forget that moment in my life. I got off the train in Giscafiquiah, and I went to the treatment center there. It was 100% Alcoholics Anonymous, AA. It was director was a Mohawk from Akwesasne, a steel worker. He had 22 years sobriety at that time. At that time, I heard that he's wanted by FBI right now in the United States of America, so shit happened. But at that time, 22 years, literally, you know, I had the greatest respect for this man, but unfortunately he had also other problems, other issues to deal with, and bad news, but that's the last I heard of him. Anyway, it's not about him, what can I say, it's, you know, and I went through there from step one until step five, and Eldon was my counselor in there, and he says, I have no idea at all on how on earth you become an alcoholic, because there is such a thing as an introvert, you know, extroverts. Myself, anyway, I can express myself to the best of my knowledge, anyway, you know. There's all kinds of different people inside these programs. There's extroverts, and there's introverts, and there's perverts. But it all different types. And as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, Eldon mentioned that to me. 8 weeks, I came into Montreal, Jim, Sharon. I remember Jim and Sharon. Very, very good. Yeah, that's right, you guys too. Yeah, John, Sandy. Friday nights, so it's Friday Central, standing room only. And that church, Erskine Church, it was a big, big cloud of smoke, for God's sake. You walk in there, man, and wow. And then you get down to low level right there. There's the people right there. But wow, that was heavy duty. And Dr. Don, that was good old Dr. Don, beautiful human beings, beautiful, beautiful human beings. So anyway, I went to meetings, and once again, I tried to make a change. I gave him my best shot to change myself. And then once again, one of the old boys from the old school showed up in my path, and off I went one more time, drinking. And anyway, I stumbled around, and once again, the way I screwed up was not going to meetings. That's it, and that's all. I go, and then get lazy, and then, hey, I'll go to another, and there's a different meeting some other time. You know, let's put that on the side. And it was totally wrong altogether, for God's sake. It was totally, totally wrong. He was a good, good buddy of mine that I used to drink with once upon a time. I grew up with him. His name is Timbo. And he showed up in my life, and we got drunk one more time. And the stone one more time, and before you get to know it, you know, not calling a sponsor, not reading the big book. I did all the mistakes that a slipper would do, you know. And so this went on, and it was in and out. I ended up in Ontario, in another Mohawk community in Ontario called Tayendanega. Learned how to fly out there, and I was flying out there. And tried one more time to get to meetings. And I found myself a sponsor by the name of Blaine, a beautiful human being. And he's a good, good person, but he and I just
didn't work. I went back into the gas bay in 95. And this time around, 95, I said, oh, shit. I met up with this buddy of mine and made very, very good friends with this one little hillbilly. And his name was Cyril. I used to call him Bad Pill Cyril. Oh, I used to love this guy. He was incredible. And we would sit back in the, we were both hermits. We would sit back in the bush and drink and until I'd go back with the Indians and I'd drink with them. And then I'd get fed up with the Indians and, you know, and go back with Bad Pill Cyril back in the bush until finally I said no, because like I said, Alcoholics Anonymous has planted a seed inside me. I said, I can't drink like this anymore. So I decided to go to, I went into a depression. I tried to do this by myself. I tried to stay away from booze by myself. And I went into a depression. There was this one gentleman by the name of Bob. He used to call me. He says to me, Gare, why don't you come on over into New Brunswick and have yourself a cup of coffee? I said, okay. So I went across the river. There's a bridge there between Quebec side and New Brunswick side. Went into Tim Hortons with him, sat down there with him. And I said, fuck, I feel bad, man. I can't even smile, nothing like that, you know. Anyway, Bob asked me, he says, when was the last time you spoke to your God? When was the last time you spoke to your Creator? Bob, man, many, many moons. He says, try and talk, you know, get it out like that. You know, ladies and gentlemen, I crossed that bridge. I went back across into the Quebec side, and I had a conversation just like I'm having with you right now with my Creator. I asked for help. I explained to the Creator, I got this burden on my shoulder right here, and I can't handle it no more, and I, like, can you please get rid of it? The next morning, and prior to that, what was I, like I said, I was in a depression. I wasn't taking no medication, and I was in a depression. I'd get up in the morning, I'd cry. I was watching Scarface 150 times, I swear to God. I loved that movie at that time. I had nothing else to watch, so I watched Scarface 150 times. And I go to the AA meeting, I was talking like Scarface. I went to the bully, the head bully of the meeting, Ronnie his name is, and I was hoping to God he'd beat me up, you know? And I call him, you fucking cuckolds. But no, nothing at all, you know? And he looks up at me. Are you all right? Yeah. So anyway, he says to me, would you like to come to a meeting? Let's go downstairs. So on the reservation is where I sobered up in Listigouche, Quebec. And I went in there and I took a look and there's Aurel over there. Aurel is the guy in the big book right here. And he's the one who starts off. He says, I used to hear all the time people say, oh, I'm unique, I'm different, and this and that. He says, you think you're different? Take a look at me. I have red hair, and I have Mi'kmaq. I'm a Mi'kmaq Indian, and that's the honest truth. You know, this guy's red like that. There is a Mi'kmaq Indian, and he's opened up. But the people inside Alcoholics Anonymous in the reservation, you know, it's like a little spark like that there, you know, right there. And then all it needs is a little like that, there is going to be a big, big, big flame. And that's exactly what's happening on my reserve right now. Yes, I must admit there's people that are dying. There's people that are slipping, so on and so forth. But still, we have a strong, very, very strong movement on the reserve. And it's, like I said, it's getting bigger, much bigger. But at that time, like I said, we were building a humongous Indian village on the reserve. And I would find myself this one little Frenchman by name is, what was his name? Somebody, anyway. And I'd take him back into the bush with me, and I'd go to this one place I found. It was very, very secluded. It was a waterfall. And I go there, and I take my eagle feather with my sweet grass. I practice a traditional way of faith. And I prayed because I wanted to feel better. I knew that I could feel better. I knew it. I honestly believed. And I'll never forget at that time, Ron T, what's his name, T's, oh, anyway, T, somebody was back there behind me like this, and the waterfall at that time was just a little tiny, can you picture that, just coming down small and tiny, and then I prayed, and then all of a sudden, it's like a beaver up river, just opening up the dam, because the water all of a sudden rushed, and I thought my ears had popped, because all of this was happening behind me. And then all of a sudden I heard my little buddy in the back there, somebody, what happened? Power of prayer, buddy, you know? And that's the time whenever I'd go back and I would see different stuff happening. For example, one particular time, trees. There's these little trees, one, two of them right there, and there's no wind. And
two of them, and the one in the middle starts to shake. And I'm seeing this, I'm seeing, and I wasn't on drugs. Like I said, no prescription pills or nothing. This is all happening in front of me. I'm witnessing this. And another time, I'm singing this one Mi'kmaq song, Kit Pu Wai. And Kit Pu Wai is a song that, to the birds of prey. And up above me, there's this humongous hawk, red-tailed hawk, checking me out. You know, saying hi to me with a smile on his face, you know, and I'm saying, wow, look at this, and all of this is happening. And I had my camera, I took a picture. So all of this had me realize that, yes, whoa, there's a force greater than me, and something that my ancestors always believed, and it's called nature. For God sakes almighty, there's no army in this world that can overtake nature. We got to see what happened not too long ago down in the, where was that, down in Mississippi, you know. That's unfortunate, but, you know, just to let you know what could nature could do. I mean, nature is the greatest force that there is existing. And I honestly believe that out my creator, she's a lady. She's Mother Earth. The prayers are towards seven different directions, northeast, southwest, towards the universe, towards the ground, and the seventh direction, your own soul, you know. My little daughter today, like I said, this happened in 96. I came into Montreal because of there's not too much employment back home. And I come into Montreal during the ice storm looking for work, cleaning sidewalks up and so on and so forth. And I met up with somebody, and she was a chronic pothead. And her and I just smoked for 9 months. Then after that, I went back to Sunday Nighters. And Sunday Nighters, I walked in there, and I said, yeah, I have my due date is back. My sobriety date is 96, and just a fit-in kind of thing. But no, that was not true. There was a lot of phonies involved. And I was sitting there one particular time, and the guy was giving the newcomer chip, and I took a look at this guy right here. What was his name? Sean. Sean's a musician, and he only has one lung. And that's the guy I was hanging with at the beginning. And I got up and I took the beginner's trip. He said, well, I don't understand. I said, it's a long story. I was smoking all the time. He said, okay. So I started my date right there. And during that time, I met up with all kinds of very, very good people inside the program. I love this program. I love these people. And these people right here, I mean, the creator turned around and said, here, take good care of her. Beautiful, beautiful lady. And before you get to know it, her and I, we had a beautiful girl together. Like I said, at the beginning, you know, shit happens and things didn't work out, but we have to take custody. My little girl, I have her every day for supper. I work here in Montreal for the health, Cree Conseil de Cree Health, Cree Council. I work for the James Bay of Northern Quebec, and I run sick people around. I work with sick people on a daily basis, and I go home, I go to the school. She's now in school. She's 5 years old. She goes to kindergarten, my little girl. She has a little uniform, and I was there for the first day. The mother was there for the first day, and, you know, that's the mother and I would go high and hang five like that, because, man, oh, man, I'm proud of that, because as far as I'm concerned, she's future McGill, and as far as I'm concerned, God only knows, maybe she's going to be a political leader. No, that's too corrupt. I don't know. I don't want that of her. No, I want her to do something good in the health field, maybe, you know. And but this is what it's all about today. And, you know, like Sean and Randy, we come across each Sean and Sandy, we come across each other on different times and different programs, different times of the month kind of thing, you know. Karen, I know all kinds of different newcomers in this program. I got to admit it. Sponsor, I have a sponsor. Just went through a couple of them. You know, one sponsor, in fact, I got a hold of. I don't know if you all know him, but never mind. Anyway, he turns around and says to me, Garrett, I never sponsored anybody before. I says, don't worry about it. His name's Gary. I says, don't worry about it, Garrett. I'll train you, you know. And it didn't work out, though. It didn't work out. So I got myself a nice sponsor right now. Anybody, Peter? Anybody know Peter? Yeah. He's a very, very beautiful human being, Peter. That's my sponsor right there. Do I sponsor you? Yes, I sponsor other people. And just like every other sponsor, they don't call me. So, you know, that's life kind of thing, you know. Just recently, though, I sat down with somebody, and he and I, we did his step 4 and step 5, and that's over with. I had let him know already. I said, please don't scare me, because I had one guy scared the living hell out of me. I even thank God Almighty that, you know, he fired me. And that's the honest truth, you know. God bless his soul. He's no longer with this kind of thing, you know. In this world, he's gone to powwow land, but shit happens. As far as the you know, this program, as far as the steps, yes,
The steps are there for a purpose. Ladies and gentlemen, like I said a little while ago, I have a commercial pilot's license. I go to that aircraft right there, and what's the first thing? Does anybody know what the first thing you do whenever you go to an aircraft? Anybody just out of the blues?
Excuse me.
Yes. You get your checklist. That's right. Exactly. You're right. You pick up your checklist. That's right. You pick up your checklist and you go through your checklist. That checklist right there stops. It starts from step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It goes on like that until 12. Well, not exactly like that, but it's the same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, as far as I'm concerned, yes, like I says, I am a dope addict, I'm a drunk, recovering, and getting better. Whenever I walk into this room right here, I am getting better. This is my medicine right here. I need my medicine. There's people I take over to the hospital on a regular basis. They go over there because their kidneys are shot, dialysis. They need it, you know. There's people I take over to the hospital because of diabetes. They have to have their insulin. Other than that, man, they're just guns, that kind of thing. This is my medicine right here. Alcoholics Anonymous, as far as I'm concerned, utter drunks and utter dope addicts for guys that want to get better, that want to have a better life. As far as I'm concerned, I want to be with these people. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm the real McCoy. And as far as I'm concerned, I got to thank God Almighty. You folks are here. Thank you.